Today on the Dominic Enyart Show, we're giving a recap of the Colorado March for Abolition right in front of Planned Parenthood. We got an awesome announcement there. There is a bill being put forward to Colorado, a bill of abolition, the abolition of abortion. We'll be talking about that and more. Should be a lot of fun right here on the Dominic Enyart Show. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to the Dominic Enyart Show. I am your host, Dominic Enyart. Follow me on Twitter at Dominic Enyart, DominicEnyart. Today is the second episode of the Dominic Enyart Show. The March for Abolition on Saturday. We've changed away from the March for Life to the March for Abolition, and that's here in Colorado. Colorado Right to Life, which, by the way, the March for Life, there's the national one in D.C., and then a lot of smaller marches throughout the country in various different states. It always gets a huge turnout. I personally wish that they would have also rebranded to the March for Abolition, as that'd be slightly less tone deaf, as I talked about on Bob Enyart Live last week. And we could focus on doing something that will actually end abortion rather than just to regulate it. But regardless, in D.C., the pro-life turnout was immense, as it always is. Tens of thousands of pro-lifers marching in the cold in the middle of January. And so it's cool that, although I believe somewhat misguided, there are a lot of people who want to see the end of Roe v. Wade, and that's encouraging. But at our Denver march here, the March for Abolition, we had a great speaker, and Colorado Right to Life's vice president gave a very, very awesome, exciting announcement that I want to get to here in a bit pertaining to the abolition of abortion. Really awesome stuff. But first, I want to spend a moment to talk about abolition as opposed to incrementalism. For almost 50 years now, Roe v. Wade has been considered the law of the land, making abortion legal nationwide. And there were states where abortion was legal even before Roe v. Wade. If you're listening live on AM 670 KLTT, you're in one of those states. Colorado itself made abortion legal in 1967, 6 years before Roe v. Wade. A lot of people think that Roe v. Wade, it was the start of it. No, there were a lot of states that made abortion legal before Roe v. Wade. Anyways, abortion, it's been legal for a long time, and there are millions of dead children, more than 60 million dead children. I think the latest estimates were saying about 63 million dead children in America from abortion. And if you have been involved in the fight to end abortion, you've likely heard the debate between incrementalism and abolition, especially if you've listened to my predecessor's show, Bob Enyart Live. You'll be familiar with that line, any law that ends with "and then you can kill the baby" is a bad law. And if you are unfamiliar, though, there are two sides to the anti-abortion group. And I've noticed in my personal life that the abolitionists tend to be more aware of the distinction in general. There are some incrementalists who are familiar with the debate, but for the most part, it seems that if there are any pro-lifers who are even familiar with the debate, they tend to lean towards abolition, which is great. It's just a problem that so many people in the anti-abortion battle aren't even aware that there are these two groups. So it is important to be aware. But one side, the incrementalists, they say, "Hey guys, abortion is bad. Let's try to make thousands of laws making abortion inconvenient and difficult to obtain, And then after we pass thousands of those laws, it'll be really hard to get abortions, and the numbers will go down. Then once we get to that point where the numbers are down, maybe then we can try and overturn Roe v. Wade. And that is incrementalism. And then the other side says, hey guys, abortion is bad. Let's try to make a law saying abortion is illegal. And that's abolitionism. It's a lot simpler, I'd say. And I adhere to abolitionism, and I'd like to make the case for that on the show right now. The speaker for at the March for Abolition on Saturday, Mario Horta, great Christian guy, he made a point, and he put it very succinctly. He gave the scenario. Imagine you come home, your husband, and you come home from a long day of work, and you, tragically, you catch your wife in the act of cheating on you, right? And how are you going to respond to that? Well, we'll make this multiple choice. Are you A, going to do nothing about it and just hope that she stops on her own? Are you B, going to try and work out some form of arrangement or compromise or agreement with her where you get her to cheat on you less? So maybe instead of cheating on you once a week, you get her to only cheat on you every other week, and then maybe go down from there. Or are you going to demand that she stops immediately? And well, if you choose option C, you are an abolitionist. You are demanding the immediate and total abolition of cheating in your relationship. Now, Mario didn't say this in his speech exactly, but I'll add this in. If you choose option A or B, first of all, you are remarkably foolish to trust someone to cheat on you less than they were already. I mean, if they're already cheating with your first and most important rule, don't be with anyone else, there's no reason to think that they won't cheat on your new regulation that you're putting in, this new don't cheat with me as much as you were regulation. Secondly, you're also somewhat pathetic, right? A man who doesn't have the dignity to stand up then and there and say, this is wrong, all of it, right? You know, a guy who doesn't have the dignity to do that is a weasel. I mean, I don't mean to put too fine a point on it, but I mean, come on, that's pathetic. Imagine how absurd it would be for the husband in that situation to say, hey, you know what? Cheating is bad. And in order to stop this cheating, I'm going to try and make thousands of rules and regulations for my wife to follow and for the other guy to follow and make cheating really inconvenient and difficult. And then hopefully I can make thousands of these rules. And eventually, hey, you never know, the cheating, it might stop completely. You see how absurd that is? You see how crazy that is? So too with abortion, when we're fighting abortion, we try and pass these thousands of laws that make it inconvenient or difficult. And do we really think that will stop it? Do we really think that inconvenience will stop abortion? With how much the left, they rave and scream and shout how much they love abortion in their lust for their hatred against God. They hate God and they love their abortion. And we really think that making it inconvenient will stop them. But we pass laws that say, you know, give the baby painkiller and then you can kill the baby. Wait 24 hours and then you can kill the baby. Make sure the baby isn't older than 6 months and then you can kill the baby. You know, you got to get parental consent and then you can kill the baby. You have to see an ultrasound and then you can kill the baby. You know, you have to get permission from the father and then the mother and then you can kill the baby. But any law that ends with, and then you can kill the baby, is a bad law. And not only is it an immoral law, but it will never end with abortion being abolished. Since Roe v. Wade, we have spent 50 years regulating abortion. Roe v. Wade wasn't itself a... It didn't just say all abortion is legal. Roe v. Wade in and of itself was a regulation. It was a regulation. So since the very instant that Roe v. Wade was passed, we've been trying to use regulation to end abortion. Even though Roe v. Wade, to start everything, it was itself a regulation. And do you guys know what the definition of insanity is, right? This is the one that everyone's heard. Trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Yet we keep trying to regulate abortion over and over and over. We spend so much effort on these heartbeat bills and all these regulations, and we spend so much time fundraising, and the pro-life industry spends so much time filling its pockets, and you'd think at some point we would start to expect that things would start to change, right? You know, we think that we would start winning, but we're still losing. I mean, I know Mike Pence has the nerve to say that life is winning, as there are women in the abortionist waiting rooms, not even 20 minutes away from where he's speaking. I know he has the nerve to say that, but he's wrong. Life is not winning. I mean, justice in the end will prevail, of course, thanks be to God. But life in America? No, life is not winning currently. It could be. It could be winning in America if we stand up, if the church were to stand up and demand abolition, that could cause life to start winning if we actually went out and did something. You know, once we abolish abortion in America, we can start thinking about saying that. We can start thinking about saying that life is winning. But this notion that right now America is a country of life, no. Even if we do abolish abortion, you know, I'll be celebrating. I'll pop open the champagne. But even then, it seems like we have to go, you know, some years before selling that as, you know, a selling point for America, saying America is a country of life. Life is winning. It's even after you fully abolish abortion, you have to wait a little bit before saying that life is winning. You know, imagine immediately after the Holocaust, Nazi Germany, 1945, if Germany were to say, you know, we are the country who loves the Jews immediately after. I would look at that with a certain level of disdain. You know, like, oh, you just did all this and you're the country who loves the Jews. Okay. And to Germany's credit, they look back at their point in history with horror and sadness. So Germany, they're honestly better than we are in that sense, because at least they acknowledge their sin. We just live in our sin. Although our country does acknowledge slavery and admits that was evil, which is cool that we admit that. It is funny, though, when I think about it, that liberals try and steal the credit for the abolition of slavery. And they say, hey, remember how all us liberals ended slavery, all the liberal abolitionists? I do really look forward to the time when liberals say, hey, do you guys remember the abortion abolitionists? Remember when we ended abortion, all us liberals? I look forward to that time. I look forward to the liberals stealing our credit. But it doesn't matter who gets the credit in my book, as long as it gets done. Because at the end of the day, glory to God. But so no, rather than regulating abortion and putting in laws that end with "and then you can kill the baby," what we should be doing is putting in laws that say abortion is illegal, it's wrong every time, 100% of the time. And you know, when we put in these regulations, it ends up further entrenching abortion into the culture, right? So the painkiller example is the best example of this. There's the law that pro-lifers try and put on the books that says, give the baby painkiller and then you can kill the baby. And what this law ends up doing, as we've seen on Bob and Yurt Live so many times, is moms will be concerned and they will think, well, you know, I don't want my baby to feel pain. That'd be terrible. And then they see, oh, well, I'm not even allowed to get an abortion if the baby feels pain anyways. And so my baby won't feel pain. So it's fine. And what regulations do is they make abortion seem more humane and reasonable. So our very laws that we spend so much time and effort putting on, like, forward, those very efforts further entrench abortion in America. I believe it was Jason Troyer who made this analogy. He said abortion is like a weed, and regulating it is like trimming it while simultaneously strengthening its roots. And then abolition, the abolitionists, instead, the abolitionists say, let's grab the weed by the core and pull it out, roots and all. Let's make it fully illegal. And this brings me to the announcement that I mentioned, the exciting announcement Vice President of Colorado Right to Life, Susan Sutherland, gave at the March for Abolition. And before I talk about that, quick reminder for you guys, if you enjoy our shows from KGov.com, including Bob Enyart Live, The Dominic Enyart Show, Theology Thursday, and Real Science Radio, you can help us to keep going by going to KGOV.com/sponsor and sponsoring a show. All right, now, the announcement, there is a bill from an abolitionist group going into Colorado. That's right, an abolition bill, HB 22-1079. HB, that's House Bill 1079. And this is the Abolishing Abortion in Colorado Bill. That's the title. I'm reading it now from the official government website. It has the .gov on the end of the website here. So it's named Abolishing Abortion in Colorado. Quick tangent. I love, 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 love how simple that is. You look at other bills, say on the ballot, and they always crack me up because they use the most confusing language possible. They're always filled with double negatives and worded in the most convoluted way. Like, they'll say, should the enforcement of double negatives be limited to the restriction of not being able to use simple sentences within the time frame allotted by the initial party's second abstraction of misuse? And you always look at that and just think, what does that mean? And they word these things so you always have to take a double glance to figure out what you're looking at. And it's lawyers, right? But no, good Christian laws are simple and they're easy to understand. And, you know, if you want a good rule of thumb for what makes a good law, if a child can't understand it relatively easily, it's a bad law. But if a child can understand it, it's probably a good law, right? Like, don't murder. It's two words, don't murder. It's so simple. But this bill, HB 22-1079, very simple, very straightforward, abolishing abortion in Colorado. It's in right now. It's been finished. The legislation is written. It's not a heartbeat bill. This is not a regulation bill. This is a bill of criminalization. And so the summary here, this is from this .gov. The summary here, I'll go through it. I don't know if we have enough time to go through the full thing, but I want to go through the summary at least. The prime sponsor, I haven't heard this name in my ventures out into the anti-abortion circles, but if he's here sponsoring this bill, an abolition bill, he must be somewhat solid. He's Representative Dave Williams. And if there is someone we should be praying for right now, it is this guy, Dave Williams. It takes a lot of courage to sponsor a bill like this. And from what I've heard, he's a believer. And from the bill itself, just looking through it, it seems like it's reasonable to say he's a Christian. And we'll link to this from today's show summary, KGOV.com, KGOV.com. And reading now from the bill defines a person to include an unborn child at all stages of gestation, from fertilization to natural death, as it relates to a private right of action in current homicide and assault provisions. So cool, it defines a person, and the definition of person includes an unborn child all the way from conception, which, if you recall, that is very similar to Colorado's personhood bills of the past. So that's pretty cool. Quote, the bill declares that any existing state law relating to prenatal homicide or regulating abortion or abortion facilities is superseded to the extent it conflicts or is inconsistent with the provisions of the bill. So I'm going to pause right here. What's so cool about this language is that with so many of our pro-life regulations, they make it so that if Roe v. Wade were overturned, abortion would stay legal. For example, if Roe v. Wade were overturned, a pregnant mom would look at our very own pro-life laws and say, see right there, it says, if I wait 24 hours, I can have an abortion. And it, our own pro-life laws provide a nice little loophole for all of these, you know, pro-choicers. But this language, it supersedes that problem. So that's cool. It supersedes that. Continuing now, the bill requires the state to enforce homicide and assault provisions without regard to the opinion of the United States Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade and other Supreme Court decisions, past and future. So you get that. Fully ignore Roe. Colorado ignored, right, if you remember, Colorado ignored the federal government to legalize weed. So we can also ignore the federal government to criminalize abortion. We don't have to pay attention to what they say. If what they say is evil and immoral, we do not have to listen. And I love that. Enforce provision without regard to the opinion of the Supreme Court. And that title, the Supreme Court, it's pretty cute. They think that they're the Supreme Court. They think that they're the highest court. They're the highest judges. It's funny. Well, maybe ironic is a better word. They take that title for themselves, and then on Judgment Day, they will realize how low they are and how they are not members of the Supreme Court. But as their opinion does not match the ruling of the actual Supreme Court, the Supreme Judge of the Earth, the court's opinion shall be ignored, quote, without regard. I love that. Continuing, quote, the bill authorizes the state to disregard any federal court decision that purports to enjoin or void this requirement and subjects of a Colorado judge to impeachment or removal if the judge purports to enjoin, stay, overrule, or void the requirement. So this takes it a step further. Not just abortion would be illegal with this bill, but if any judge tries to void this bill and tries to thereby make abortion legal in some case, they will be subject to impeachment or removal. I mean that's pretty great. If I had it my way, if this were a law and I had it my way and I were to write it and someone tried to make it void, the penalty, I believe, would be death. But impeachment or removal, it's a pretty solid, pretty good start. A lot of people tell me I'm an extremist for loving the death penalty so much. But think about this. What is the biblical punishment for an attempted crime? You would be punished. The biblical punishment, you would be punished as if you had successfully committed that crime. So someone advocating rape, they want rape to be legal so that he can rape people. And when he advocates making rape legal, that is just his long roundabout way of trying to rape somebody. So that man should be considered as if he attempted rape, and he should be put to death because he tried to make it legal. It's an attempted rape. And so too with abortion. If abortion were made illegal and someone started advocating that it should be allowed, that person, they're advocating murder, i.e. it's attempted murder, and he should be punished for attempted murder. So if anything, this bill isn't harsh enough. I know I'm a hard customer to please. I get that. But this bill, it really is great, and it would criminalize abortion here in Colorado. So we definitely should be supporting this. It's worth our support, and it's worth our prayer. Let's definitely make a big effort to support this bill. HB 22-1079. And that's all I had for that. We don't have much time left, but I did want to talk about one other thing Joe Rogan, if you listen to my show, there's a good chance you're the type of person who has heard of Joe Rogan. If not, you probably listen to him. And I don't especially enjoy his show. Some of his stuff is fun, and his guests will talk about things interesting here and there. I always like to listen to Joe Rogan when there's someone specifically I know who goes on to his show, like Jordan Peterson. If he goes on there, I enjoy listening to Jordan Peterson. But if you're not familiar, Joe Rogan, he has the largest podcast in the world. Absolutely massive, millions, millions, millions of listeners. But recently there's been a push, of course, because why not, to get him banned from Spotify, where he hosts his show. And Joe is a, I'd call him a big time liberal. Not everyone would call him a big time liberal, but he votes blue often. The best you could say about him is he's a lukewarm liberal. That's about where I'd put him. And he reaches across the aisle and has some Republican beliefs, so he gets people from both sides to listen in to his show. And like I said, I'm not the biggest fan, but I've been seeing so much recently, especially on Twitter, but I've been seeing so much against Joe Rogan. And it all started when he had this one expert on who was a, I forget what he was. He was some health expert or something or other, and who wasn't like a COVID-1984 lunatic. He wasn't for all the insanity. And that got them fired up, the liberal crowd on Twitter, because of course it would. And then that was a few weeks ago. Then yesterday on Twitter, I kept seeing posts about this guy. He's a musician. He's named Neil Young. But he threatened Spotify, and he said if Spotify doesn't take Joe Rogan's show off their platform, he's pulling his music from Spotify. And Joe Rogan, if you're not aware, is being paid millions, millions by Spotify to be exclusively on Spotify. So do I think Spotify will cave? No, I don't. I think this is too much money. But this raised the question on Twitter, who is Neil Young? And I don't know. All these people are arguing if Neil Young is famous or not. I've never heard of him. A brief survey of my friends my age, they've never heard of him. And Spotify, that's people my age who are listening to Spotify primarily. And so Spotify, if you're listening to me on the Dominic Inyart Show, we're your target demographic. We don't really know who Neil Young is. We all know who Joe Rogan is. And use your platform to listen to him, not Neil Young. So will Spotify cave? I don't think so. I think they shouldn't, just out of principle. I don't care too much one way or the other about Joe Rogan's show. It's a good show, but I'm not emotionally invested in it. I just know liberals hate him, and financially it doesn't make much sense to appease the liberals. And it'll be fun to see if Spotify, which is liberal itself, will be able to stand up to the Neil Young mob and not lose a ton of money. And that will about do it for us today on today's show. Reminder to join us here tomorrow for Theology Thursday, same time, same place. And then again on Friday with Real Science Radio. And then join us this Sunday at Agape Kingdom Fellowship. That's Agape Kingdom Fellowship in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. Bible study starts at 9:30, and then that goes to 10:30. And then we have a half hour break, and worship and the sermon start at about 11. That's all a lot of fun. Also, hey, tonight, Wednesday night, I will be leading Bible study. We're in the book of Joshua. That's 7 p.m. at Agape Kingdom Fellowship. Hope to see you there. And until then, this is Dominic Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.